We're going to spend the next few minutes contemplating financial ruin. Not our own for a change, but that in the world of Charles Dickens. His was a time in the 19th century that the Bank of England nearly went under. One could lose everything suddenly and totally, and a young boy like Oliver Twist could find himself on the streets working for an unsavory character like the pickpocket Fagin.
In this life, one thing counts in the bank, large amounts. I'm afraid these don't grow on trees. You got the pickpocket.
Whether it was Oliver or Little Dorrit or Christmas Carol, hard times permeated Dickens' work. Robert Douglas Fairhurst is a professor at Oxford University's Magdalen College. He's written about the parallels between the current financial crises and those in 19th century England that began when Charles Dickens was a boy.
1825, that's when the Bank of England realised that it had been handing out lots of money to speculative investments, often in overseas projects that would never get off the drawing board. Its reserves were gradually dwindling. It was down to its last 3 million, and it withdrew all the loans, which meant that almost overnight 500 companies went bankrupt. And you see echoes of that in Dickens's writing. Nicholas Nickleby has Mrs. Nickleby telling her husband that he should speculate with all their assets. And what happens is the bubble bursts,
leaving the Nickleby family desperate and penniless, as in this scene from a BBC production of Nicholas Nickleby.
My husband died of a broken heart.
Nonsense, no such thing. Man can't pay his debts, then he dies of a broken heart, and his widow's a martyr.
It was Father's dying wish that we should come to London in the hope you might help us, Uncle.
You see echoes of these financial crises rippling through the whole 19th century. In the mid-1850s, a huge bank called Strahan, Paul and Bates folded. The main shareholder had been defrauding it. And this was happening while Dickens was writing Little Dorrit. There's another character, Myrtle. And Dickens describes how he sets about defrauding the bank of millions of pounds. And when he's discovered, he slits his wrists. And that is a direct parallel with a real Lord of the Treasury, John Sadleyr, who had been plundering a bank in Tipperary. So some of the things which you tend to think of as modern are actually as old as the 19th century. A lot of the popular songs that we now think of as being rather cheery in the 19th century reflect serious economic hardships. My old man said, follow the van and don't dilly-dally on the way, for instance.
We had to move away, cause the rent we couldn't pay. The moving van came round just after dark. There was me and my old man shoving things inside the van, as we'd often done before, let me remark.
It's about being thrown out of your home. And the word home, or houseless, chime all the way through Dickens's novels like a death knell, as if he recognises just how fragile, how precarious people's houses and their homes are.
There are many people who don't realise that one could be thrown in jail simply for having a debt.
That's right,
and
yes.
In Dickens' case, I think his family joined his father in the prison.
That's absolutely right, and it's a crisis that cast a long, dark shadow over the rest of his career. Little Dorrit has very strange echoes of the young Charles Dickens visiting his father in the prison.
And here's that scene from a BBC production of Little Dorrit.
Oh, Amy, I have brought disgrace upon us all.
No, you haven't, Father. We all love you, and we are all very proud of you.
But it's not as it was meant to be. You've known nothing else. But if you'd known me as I was before I came here, before you were born.
Charles Dickens himself, when his family lost everything, he ended up in very dire circumstances, working as a kid in a factory.
That's absolutely right. It was his job to stick labels onto bottles of blacking, which was the forerunner of shoe polish. And he was doing this in the window of the factory, and it was a ramshackle, tumble-down sort of place with rats. And he worked next to somebody called Fagin. And Fagin, it turned out, was the only boy who was nice to him. And you can see some of Dickens' ambivalence in the way he turned Fagin into the villain of Oliver Twist. Because, of course, it's Fagin who drags Oliver Twist down onto his level.
Well, I wonder if it would have been different if he had been born poor. The notion that somehow he had a comfortable childhood suddenly shattered is what gave him such a sensitivity to the whole thing, that maybe a bit of an obsession.
That's very interesting. And you see elements of that, again, in some of his writing. Early fiction like Oliver Twist, one could think of as being a kind of wish fulfillment fantasy in which the hero is showered with gold as a reward at the end of the novel.
Were there happy endings for Charles Dickens?
There were happy endings for him in one sense. He made a lot of money out of writing. He left £93,000 in his will, which in today's money would make him a millionaire several times over. But the fact that he was always worried about money, even though he was very generous with it and used to give a lot of money to charity and to begging letter writers, suggests that it was something that nagged at him throughout his life. There's something that his father said to him when he was in the Marshalsea debtor's prison that really seems to have struck a chord. He told him if a man had £20 a year and spent £19, 19 shillings and sixpence, he would be happy, but that a shilling spent the other way would make him wretched. He put exactly those lines into the mouths of Mr. Micawber in David Copperfield, which was his autobiographical novel.
Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £20 and six. Result, misery. The blossom is blighted. The leaf is withered. You are, in short, flattened.
And that stark thought from a BBC production of David Copperfield. Oxford professor Robert Douglas Fairhurst is writing a biography of Dickens, and he's offered more thoughts on the parallels between our hard times and Dickens in the British newspaper The Telegraph. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.
Dear old gent, passing by, something nice takes his eye.
Everything's clear, attack the rear. Get in and pick a pocket or two, you. Gotta pick a pocket or two, boys. You gotta pick a pocket or two.